U.S. government just lost a big buyer of its debt.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Jeremy Hobson with The Morning Open, a look at business and the economy as Wall Street starts the day. Coming up, should we be concerned that the world's biggest bond investment fund has dumped all of its holdings of U.S. debt? But first, where's Wall Street? Stocks are lower right now, significantly. The Dow is down 163 points at 12,050. The Nasdaq down about 1.5%, and the S&P 500 also down about 1.5%. The number of people heading to the unemployment office for the first time jumped by 26,000 last week to around 400,000. And China today reported its biggest trade deficit in 7 years, which means China is now buying more from abroad than it is selling. Now let's get to this morning's news on U.S. government bonds. The biggest bond fund in the world, PIMCO, says it's gotten rid of all of its U.S. treasuries. Our regular Thursday analyst Diane Swank is off today. Instead, we're joined live by our New York bureau chief, Heidi Moore. Good morning, Heidi.
Good morning, Jeremy.
So how significant is it that PIMCO is getting rid of its U.S. bonds?
It's absolutely not the worst thing in the world. I think this shows that treasuries are absolutely at the top of their price, right? So the Federal Reserve has been buying up treasuries,
right,
and about $1 trillion worth, actually. So they're very expensive right now. And Bill Gross has been complaining about that for months and months. So from his perspective, he's selling them when he can get the best price. But it's not dire for the U.S. economy.
Typically, government bonds do well when the economy is poor. So by selling government bonds, Bill Gross is implicitly saying, hey, we expect conditions to improve a little bit.
Exactly. So what that really tells us right now is that, yes, we may be in for some rough patches with inflation and so on. But really, if you take the money out of treasury bonds, you have to put it somewhere else, which is probably in company bonds, which, again, shows faith in the fact that we're going to have some resilience from the corporate sector.
And Heidi, I should say that was Guy Labov, Janney Montgomery Scott. I'd recognize that voice anywhere. And you are Marketplace New York Bureau Chief Heidi Moore. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Well, it turns out there are now more billionaires in the world than there have ever been. And according to Forbes magazine, many of them are now coming from countries you might not expect. The BBC's Rebecca Singer has more from London.
With a $74 billion bank account, Mexican telecom tycoon Carlos Slim is the world's richest man for the second year running. Bill Gates and Warren Buffett are clinging onto second and third place. But while the number of billionaires in the US continues to grow, American dominance is beginning to slip. Steve Forbes is editor-in-chief of the magazine.
The US share of global billionaires is on a downtrend. So while the US is inching forward, parts of the world are just surging forward.
Countries like China, which has added 46 new billionaires in the last year alone. Indonesia has doubled its billionaire count to 14, with coal and tobacco making people big fortunes. And Russia, where Moscow is now home to more billionaires than any other city in the world. And one last nugget, there are six names on the list, including founder Mark Zuckerberg, who owe most of their fortunes to Facebook. In London, I'm the BBC's Rebecca Singer for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Allianz, providing retirement solutions in the U.S. that can help to guarantee income for life. AllianzUSA.com. By CSX, whose trains move a ton of freight nearly 500 miles on 1 gallon of fuel to help reduce fuel consumption. CSX, how tomorrow moves. And by Thomson Reuters, committed to empowering professionals of the world with the knowledge needed to do what they do best, the Knowledge Effect.
The Florida Department of Transportation has released a study showing that the proposed rail line, the high-speed rail line between Tampa and Orlando, would have had more than 3 million riders and would have made money in its first year. But as you may remember, the governor of Florida turned down federal funds for the project. Let's bring in our economics correspondent, Chris Farrell, to dig into the issue of high-speed rail and its economic impact. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning.
So how important is high-speed rail for the economies of various regions in the country?
I think that high-speed rail is important in the short run because it will provide a lot of construction jobs. And in the long run, I think it's very important in a region because we have an aging infrastructure, we have increasing congestion. And Jeremy, I don't know if you noticed, but we also have a high price of oil.
Yeah.
So high-speed rail will help move people cheaper, faster, and easier.
But there's a lot of skepticism that remains. What is the cost of just leaving things the way that they are right now?
I think there are two major costs. If you look at our infrastructure, it's aging. Recent estimates, it's costing us $200 billion a year. If you look at things like trucks just sitting in traffic jams, so that's a long-term cost in terms of our bridges, our water, our energy. But the other part of it is we need to start dealing with creating a new infrastructure that really gets around this whole issue of congestion. And high-speed rail is part of it, unless you want to be building airports everywhere.
Now, there are 50 states in the country, Chris. Is there any state that you're looking at that's doing things right?
You know, I think there are a number of states that are doing things right. Denver's doing things right in that city. Twin Cities here, we're building light rail. But let me highlight Virginia. The new governor, Bob McDonnell, borrowing $4 billion. And what he said is, look, interest rates are low. Our economy is weak. The cost of construction is down.
Right.
Now is the time to borrow and rebuild our roads. Bravo. He's doing the right thing. Contrast that with Governor Christie in New Jersey. He decided he didn't want to spend the $2.7 billion to improve the rail link between New Jersey and New York. And Jeremy, it's the wrong move for New Jersey because the growth of northern New Jersey really depends on the metropolitan area called New York City. It extends into Connecticut, extends into New Jersey. And so workers could go back and forth with ease and safely.
Two Republican governors doing two very different things when it comes to infrastructure. Marketplace economics correspondent Chris Farrell, thanks so much.
Thanks a lot.
And finally, how would you like to walk into a Crate and Barrel and find a couch named after you? Well, if you're hotel operator Ian Schrager, who's famous for turning hotel lobbies into urban lounges, you wouldn't like that very much. Crate and Barrel named their new white leather sofa Ian after him, and he's reportedly sent a cease and desist letter. A source told the New York Post, in this case, imitation isn't the best form of flattery. In Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. And this is APM, American Public Media. You put in the time and the hard work, and eventually it pays off. That's how the American dream is supposed to work, isn't it?
We've grown up believing that if we work hard and strive for our dreams, they will come true. And I believed that.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Sometimes things don't go according to plan. That story next time on Marketplace from APM, American Public Media.